Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome to episode 63 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. Today, I have been waiting for this day because I've been trying to get this guy for a long time. I have Hiten Shah. I am a big fan of his writing and his tweets. He co-founded Stuff That I Use as a Marketer, Crazy Egg, and Kiss Metrics. He also writes on product habits and as well started a new company called FYI. Now, he's built more than 10 different products actually and has started companies like marketing consultancy, a podcast advertising network, and a hosting company. So we're going to learn a lot from Hiten. He also invests in startups and advises startups in the Silicon Valley. There's so much good stuff in this. You'll learn, first of all, Hiten's billion-dollar mistake with Kiss Metrics and how you can avoid it. Second, Hiten's mental models in helping him build lovable products. And third, as a startup investor, advisor, and serial entrepreneur, Hiten shares his one piece of advice for founders. Now, I created a growth cheat sheet with all the notes from this episode. There's just so much stuff that Hiten shares. Why take notes when you can steal my notes from this podcast? Go to growthtoday.fm/63 to get it now, or you can find the link in the description down below. Before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. I'm not sure if you know, this podcast is a one-person show. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast in my quote-unquote free time. So I want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They're a demand generation and ops agency. Check them out at 42.agency. That's F-O-U-R-T-Y. TWO42.agency. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters, my early adopter Patreons, Jamie from Las Vegas, Veronica from London, UK, Fabrizio Marcias from Brazil, Nicholas Vargas from Sydney, Sam from New Zealand, Joseph Valenti from Quebec, Canada. I really do appreciate you supporting me with this podcast. Enough about me. Let's jump in my chat with Hiten. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to talk to Hiten. I've been a big fan of his tweets and his writing. Thank you so much for jumping on this call. How are you doing, Hiten?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm doing great, as always.
Yeah, you've been working on some stuff, FYI particularly, and a blog post that you wrote about competitors. But before we jump there, this is my first time doing this. I want to do like a quick fire warm-up.
Cool.
So first, Marvel or DC, which one do you prefer?
Both.
Which, if you had to pick a superhero, which one?
Batman.
Okay, all right. Not Superman, eh?
Batman, no superpowers. It's great.
That's true. Nintendo or Genesis?
Nintendo.
Dark mode or just regular mode?
Dark mode.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Both.
Oh, okay. Chrome or Firefox?
Chrome.
And last one, just do you do coffee or tea?
Tea. I actually quit coffee.
Oh, how long ago?
Maybe 2 years now.
Wow. Yeah. Any particular tea brand that you really enjoy,
or just like I really like Samovar tea. It's a store. They have a bunch of stores in San Francisco. They also make food there. I like Samovar tea. For years, people would think I was the Samovar tea person just because I would I would have my meetings there. So our office was right across the street from it, our Kiss Metrics office. So.
That's amazing. I actually want to talk about that. I know you're working on FYI right now. Can you tell me a little bit of story of like your journey so far, from Crazy Egg, Kiss Metrics, and now working on FYI with Marie?
I started a consulting business with my brother-in-law in 2003. That was about 16 years ago now, and we were basically selling marketing services to people, and so that included social media, SEO. All those kinds of things. And we were pretty good at it. So we started making money. And then what we decided to do was start building software because we just thought we wanted to get in that game. And we built about 12 different things. This was in a time like between like 2004 and 5, even 2006 a little bit. And what ended up happening is Crazy Egg, which creates heat maps where people are clicking on a page, really started taking off. And it still exists today. It's about 14 years later. We launched it in 2005. And it's a self-funded profitable business. And we've been running it like that since. And then a couple years later, we decided to go down the path of raising money because we just had a sort of, in retrospect, you could say it was a bigger idea. And this idea was Kissmetrics, which we wanted to build a sort of full-fledged analytics product that had all the features. Crazy Egg was only about seeing where people click on a page. Kissmetrics was much more about understanding like things like your revenue, your lifetime value, all tied to the actual users that are signing up for your product. So it was more for like modern products that were like SaaS and even like e-commerce and products like that that had kind of conversion funnels and things to track. We focused on those types of businesses. And with that business, we had a lot of different ups and downs. But the thing that I would say is very interesting about what we created is like the foundational technology and the way that we were doing tracking and even visualization of conversion funnels and things like that has basically permeated most of the industry, where if you have an analytics product, you're basically you've implemented the things that we kind of came up with and pioneered. After that, I took a break after Kissmetrics. There's, again, lots of ups and downs. Took a break after my journey there and started investing and advising a bunch of different companies. And then I basically met my co-founder, Marie, as I was advising a company, actually. And we just really hit it off. We really got along and decided to start building businesses together. And this business that is called FYI, it's at usefyi.com, was started because we both really believe in doing research and really understanding customers really well. And also we believe in wanting to find kind of the biggest opportunity we could. And so we tried a couple different things in the document space, and then we kind of stepped back and decided to find out what is the most challenging, painful problem in the space. And it turns out that finding your documents across all the different apps you use today is the biggest problem that people have. And once we discovered that, we started really building out different sort of, we started with a 5-day MVP that was just a search box, because most people think of finding their documents like using a search box. What we realized is that that box isn't the best because it doesn't really get retention. People don't want a search box, actually, to find their documents. Lo and behold, just because it's a find your documents sort of problem doesn't mean that people will actually successfully use a search box, is what we discovered. And we discovered that they would barely use it once a month, most people. So we decided to keep going because we learned it was the biggest problem to solve. And then we ended up creating an interface. And that's why today I can tell you, you know, we help you find your documents in 3 clicks or less. And you know, that's our goal. That's our job. And we've built an interface that helps you do that, basically.
That's a compelling value proposition. That's actually great. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a bit. I wanted to ask you, if you knew you were always going to be an entrepreneur, and what did your parents think? Because my background is a Filipino, and when I told my parents I'm going to start a company, they were like, go be a doctor, go be an engineer. Did you face the same experience?
My experience was very different. My father actually told me I should be an entrepreneur.
Oh.
He is a physician, and his advice was you should be an entrepreneur. And it's because, and he told me this when I was 4 or 5 years old. And his take was, it's because you have more freedom. You get to have more control over your time and your life. And you get to basically decide what you do. And it's just more opportunities are open to people who tend to take that path. And that was his opinion. I think in part, he ended up being a physician because he took a test. And when he took the test, he ended up being right on the border of being able to be a physician. And nobody in his family had been a doctor up until then. And so he was kind of put into this track. And I think he just has some level of like, oh, you know, I wish I could have been something else, or I wish I could have done something else. But it just was a lot of pressure, I think positive pressure, to become a physician. And, you know, he's a physician. And that's what he kind of told me, which, like, you know, kind of you hinted at, it's kind of odd for sort of South Asian sort of type parents and stuff.
And now I'm curious, do you want your child, like, do you want your child to be an entrepreneur, or you just let them do whatever they want to be when they grow up?
I think it's important for them to do whatever they want to do when they grow up. I think it's something where I'd rather them see all the different opportunities in life and decide what they want to do. So I don't think I'd push or pull in any direction. The only caveat would be if they grow up and show a tendency towards one thing or another, I might encourage them to try certain things.
The other thing I wanted to ask is, I read Ryan's book, Lost and Founder, and he said starting a game is like playing a video game for the second time around with cheat codes. Did you find it easier starting a company second or third or fourth time around?
I think it's different every time. I would say that there's a different, you know, there's the market that you're in. There's the timing of the idea and the timing of when you're starting. And then there's the people you're starting with. So I would say, yeah, there are some definite cheat codes that you can use. Some of them are just oriented around knowing what you didn't know last time. And I think a lot of the way I think about it is just, I know a lot about things that I didn't know last time.
Mm. And one of the other things I've read in one of your quotes is you're building like mental models. Like, that's one of the things you suggest to entrepreneurs, is build those kind of mental models. What kind of mental models have you kind of learned along the way as you've built FYI?
Yeah, I think one mental model I try to think of is what is a business's conditions for success, or conditions of success, depending on how you want to look at it, and how do you identify those? So in every type of business that you're in, there's basically some conditions that make you increase your likelihood to success, or there are criteria that you're imposing on the business that you might not be super conscious of. And I think those things are really, really important. For example, with a e-commerce business, one of the conditions for success is that you actually are able to understand your margin. And over time, you can actually manage your margin. That could mean that it decreases, but you're able to manage it and make sure that even though your margin decreases, you can still be profitable. Or that could be that you find ways to increase your margin over time by either charging more or, you know, working on the materials that are used to build your product or create your actual physical product. Those are the kind of things I think about a lot. And I think you can have a mental model of what are the conditions for success for the business that I'm in. I usually identify 2 to 3 of these and really make sure that the moves we're making, the way we think about the business is filtered through these things.
What is your condition for success for FY? Like, what are those 2 or 3 things?
So yeah, there's a few things we really care about. The number one thing we care about is we wanted to build a freemium business. So we wanted to build a business that has a free plan and is very generous with it. We wanted to build a business that can be a product that can be used by anyone, especially whole companies, so whole teams. So that's what we've been working on right now. And then we wanted to build a business where we could charge on a per user basis.
Right.
Those are the 3 kind of big things that we really cared about the most.
I want to jump on the freemium side because I've read from Rob Walling that freemium is like a double-edged sword. You cut your arm off. How do you know which feature to give as free and which feature to like add as value for FY particularly?
I believe that you have to really understand your customers really well to understand what is going to get them to sign up. And then when they sign up, what kind of new opportunities and problems can you solve for them? And which one of those will they pay for? So that requires a lot of thought process, a lot of research, and a lot of testing too. So we do a lot of testing, whether it's user research, just to understand whether our theories are on point or not, because it's really all these things are theories until you put them into practice. So, you know, the simple way to say it is like we go into a lot of depth.
Have you figured that out for FY then? Like, particularly now, you've talked to enough customers that this feature sets are free and then this are more on the premium side.
Yeah, we figured a lot of that type of stuff out. I mean, one of the key things we figured out is that there's availability of the documents that you have in our system and how far back we go. In terms of those documents. So we've definitely figured out some value metric around that. We've also thought through a lot about sort of what kind of features a company needs as they sort of grow with us, and how can Right. some of those be things that help them sort of manage the, I'll call it the situation that we've created for them in our product.
I want to take a step back and talk about your MVP. You said that you initially created a search box and you found out that people that's not what people wanted. And you talked about retention on that piece. What kind of advice would you have for people building an MVP, and it's too minimum or it's too extravagant? Like, where is the middle ground?
I think we get MVPs wrong, and it's just because of the way people have thought about kind of minimum viable products since it was first coined and thought of by Eric Ries. The big thing that I would think about when I think about MVPs like this is something really kind of obvious, but I think tough for people to digest and understand, which is your MVP isn't necessarily the thing you continue with. It's the thing you create in order to learn. Mm. And you're creating it so that you can aggressively learn about the problems people have. That's what we care about. Like, and it's the problems they have. You're creating it to learn. If you are, you know, really conscious of it, you're actually creating an MVP so you can figure out what not to do instead of what to do. So we took one of our riskiest assumptions at FYI. One of the riskiest assumptions at FYI was that people are, going to use a search box if we give them one to find their documents. And so we just thought through how fast can we build that. We didn't necessarily think we would continue with what we built. And I think that's the key. A lot of people build an MVP and think that this is the thing I'm going to build on top of. We build an MVP, if you want to call it that, in order to learn and figure out like something we couldn't figure out any other way. Because there's a lot of ways to figure this out. You can do interviews, you can do surveys, you can you can manually do things with people. There's a number of things you can do like that in order to figure out, hey, am I right? Am I wrong about what I think people will do? And once you figure that out, that's like what you go test. That's what you go figure out. That's what you go figure, try to determine if it's right or wrong, if you're right or wrong. So in our case, we wanted to know if we were right or wrong about the search box. We had intuition. Our intuition was a lot of people had come before us that had built a search box, and essentially they had either been acquired or they failed or, you know, went out of business or whatever happened. And we wanted to know why. And we also knew that the obvious answer to what we wanted to do was build a search box. And that didn't feel like the right answer, though, to us. So then we decided to build it first so we could make sure that we weren't missing anything.
Part of like building an MVP is actually presenting it to the right kind of customers. Because then you can present the right MVP to the wrong customers, and there's no customers MVP fit essentially. How did you find out your best customers for FUI, and who were you targeting initially?
Yeah, we wanted to build a free product that anyone could use, and in the beginning, we really focused on building a product that we call is in single player mode. And single player mode is really just a single person can use it and get a ton of value from it. That was our first thing. Our next thing that we've been working on is building a product that teams want to use. And then the thing after that is building a product that companies want to use. So that's how we think about it. We really focus in on really nailing that aspect of our business, which is like, what are the different stages of the business? What are the different things we care about most? And how can we deliberately validate and build for those things? So we know that we've built a product, and we know the ways to improve it. That's what we call single player mode. And it's multiplayer mode that we've been working on. And then we get to like sort of company wide. So there's a bunch of deliberate sort of conversations we've been having to be able to determine how do we essentially learn the most we can about what we're going to need to build. And it's not like one of those things where you sit here and you say, okay, this is how I'm going to do it from the beginning, right? This is an evolution. This is something we learned over time. And we learned what those actual features and value propositions and problems that we can solve for those different criteria that we have.
When it comes to that single, I actually really like that. It reminds me of like Super Mario or something. When it comes to that single player, did you figure out who that person is? I'm seeing that that person would be essentially your advocate or your evangelist to the bigger company. Is it the product manager or is it remote workers? I'm looking at your blog and it's a little bit of like focusing on product managers, and then just a little bit about.
We've found a really wide use case there where it's like there are people who do distributed work that tend to have this problem a little bit more painfully. Then there's people who have multiple different accounts in multiple different services, and they want all those accounts in one place. So there's people like that. Usually that's like agencies, freelancers, folks like that. So there's a number of these different opportunities that we have in terms of type of people. But again, we wanted to build a product that anyone could use. So our emphasis has always been about, yeah, there's certain types of people that are more likely to use it. But then also, we want to make sure that the widest amount of people can use it too. So that's the way we thought about it. That being said, yeah, there are definitely distinct categories today of types of people. So like I said, someone who's freelancer agencies, they have lots of different accounts that we've learned, and we let you connect all of them across all the different apps, multiple accounts if you want. And that's a pretty big use case for a certain type of person. Another big use case is inside of companies, we're noticing that different teams use different apps, and different people on the different teams want to be able to coordinate with each other. So one of the easiest ways is when they connect the different apps that the company uses, and you're able to see all the different activity that's going on and find stuff. And that's why it's really wide, you know, that's on purpose.
Is there a particular app that you kind of modeled that around?
No, there's really no good analogy. I think the best way I would say it is email products. So let's say Superhuman is single player mode, right? You don't need your team there. And then Slack is basically multiplayer mode, and in some cases company-wide. So we basically modeled ourselves so that we can get the best of these different sort of paradigms.
When we come back in just a moment, Hiten shares about why they price FYI at $8 per user and the research they did to get that, how they structured their value proposition, and more. Just a quick thanks to my sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. I've known the founder of that agency for some time now, Camille Rexton. Camille and his team helps B2B SaaS companies streamline operations, implement new tech stack, and design ABM and demand generation strategies to help you create a predictable revenue pipeline. They've worked with some amazing companies like OnFleet, HubDoc, GuestLogix, FlexDay, and more. Book a free road mapping session now at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwoAgency.com/GMT. I also want to thank my Patreon supporters. If you don't like ads like this, support me for as little as $2 per episode for an ad-free version of this podcast. You also know who I have coming up as my guest, be part of a private Slack group, and have monthly Patreon AMA video calls with me. Go to patreon.com/growtoday to help me with the cost to maintaining and growing this podcast. Enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Hiten, where he breaks down how they figured out their pricing strategy. I want to talk about your pricing because I know you have a podcast with Patrick Campbell from ProfitWell. Your pricing is based on user, but I saw on your website it's $8 per user. How did you come up to that $8? Did you experiment or did you...
Yeah, the pricing, we know Patrick really well, and he actually worked with us to basically do pricing research early on, and this was in the single player mode. So our pricing is actually going to get tweaked and changed as we build out multiplayer mode. So right now, the $8 was based on research, actually, and realizing what people really wanted, and not even what they wanted, it's just like what their willingness to pay was.
What does that research look like, or is that all Patrick did and you guys? It was more.
No,
like
we did it with him. We wrote a whole like set of emails on it on our product habits email list. And it's a lot of just basically understanding the customer really well using surveying, different types of surveying techniques.
Well, what kind of questions did you ask? Did you ask like, oh, what are you willing to pay for this?
No, you never really ask what are you willing to pay. You usually focus on their what price point. You make them enter in price points of when they think it would be expensive or when they think this would be considered cheap. And then you use some analysis to basically go from there and determine the right price point for you. There's a lot of analysis that goes into it and a bunch of surveying. It's not like super crazy advanced, but it does definitely take a bunch of effort.
I want to talk about onboarding. And this is actually something that Joseph Valenti, one of my Patreon supporters, wanted to ask you. What do you do when you have an app and it requires a lot of friction and steep learning curve to get somebody onboarded to your product? Now with FYI, I'm guessing that people would have to connect multiple apps so that they can fully realize the value of FYI. How do you make sure that onboarding process is as frictionless as possible?
That's a good question. So we do a number of things. So before we tweak the onboarding. We actually do a ton of user testing to run people through it and understand where it might break or what might be confusing. And this really solves for a lot of the copy and making sure people understand it. And then what we do is once we launch it, once we've felt really good about that, then we launch it and then we measure it, obviously using step-by-step conversion funnels and understand where the drop-offs are. And then we try to figure out why people are dropping off. That might be a combination of on-site surveys, as well as interviewing people on, and doing the equivalent of onboarding them manually. And then we tweak it and we A-B test it.
I'm curious if you figured that out. Like if you connect like X number of apps to FYI, then they're more likely to stick around through the whole process or become a paying customer. Is that what you've found? Like there's that like limit where they've kind of fall off the cliff to becoming a paying customer?
Yeah, the number is about 3. So if they've connected 3 apps, they become highly retained as of right now.
And is that something that you're really encouraging now? Like right on the onboarding, it's like you need to connect 3 apps. Like what Facebook does is like you have to add 15 friends essentially.
Yeah, at the moment we make it really easy and we don't really push it. This isn't like that prescriptive for us because there's a number of other opportunities, even if you don't connect 3, that we've been working on.
That's actually really insightful. I think I read about a post where you talked about how you acquire your first 1,000 paying customers for Crazy Again Kiss Metrics. How are you doing that for FYI?
So FYI, we did something different. And because we wanted to really learn about single player mode and the market we're in is kind of a new market, like we're essentially like creating it just because we haven't seen a product that lets you find your docs in 3 clicks or less, right? That's a very unique value proposition for us. So we actually decided to release, we haven't done a big, big launch, but we decided to release the single player mode product really early, probably when we were a little uncomfortable before we had multiplayer so that we could really validate and understand and get lots of signups in an open way. And then what we're going to do next is actually we're thinking through how do we want to basically rejigger our launch strategy and our acquisition strategy as we take on the multiplayer mode and convert over to multiplayer mode. For us, like single player mode was just an experiment to make sure that we could nail that. And so we released it in May of 2018. So it's been over a year. And we've just been learning a ton and we've been iterating the product, building the infrastructure, because it's actually quite challenging to build infrastructure to connect to all these different apps, standardize things, and make sure that we can keep up with that. And that's what a lot of what we've been working on is that, and then updating our integration so that they're ready for multiplayer mode, because that's also something else that is, realistically, it's not trivial. It's not like an easy product to build.
You've said it multiple times already, your value proposition. I really love it. It's memorable. You can help people find their documents in 3 clicks or less. How did you and Marie think about that? Like, how did that come about?
We were literally studying the way that they described it to us in interviews and the value they were getting. And so one of the places we wanted to solve for is how do we describe it today? What value are people getting? And it was a lot of it is based on like what they were telling us. And a lot of what they were telling us was oriented around basically how easy and quick it was for them to find documents without having to do a search. And so based on that and talking to them, we talking to our customers, the people that are using the product, we determined exactly what kind of value prop would work the best. And then we kept testing it in user tests to make sure that like it just made sense to people and they got excited about it. And then we landed on this as we played around with it. So a lot of it was inspired. The majority of kind of the thought process and the tests were inspired by what people said.
I want to shift gears a bit. And you just wrote a post with Marie about competitors. How do you approach competitors? Do you just ignore them or do you take that into consideration when you're building the product and doing marketing?
Yeah, what we and I know we wrote a whole post on this. So our whole take is don't ignore competitors. And we tell you why you shouldn't ignore it, even though a lot of very famous people have said you should ignore competitors. And our whole reason for ignoring competitors is because by studying competitors, you get to learn about the customer. And so our lens is always like, how can customers, how can we get a better and better view of what the customers are thinking? And one of the key views for that are actually analyzing the competition, because the competition is where it's at, basically. So, and what I mean by that is the competition is also speaking to your customer. So you're missing out on a huge source of learning if you're actually ignoring your competitors, because it's all about like, what do your actual customers, what do potential customers think about the competition?
I want to just shift gears one last time. And I want to talk about an article you wrote, I think a year ago or a few years ago, where you talked about your billion-dollar mistake with something you called hidden bombs, where you would drop a bomb, like a new idea or a new direction to your team. And then it's something that they had to do right now. Like, I think as entrepreneurs and even some growth folks that I've talked to, it's so easy to get caught up with the new thing or new channel. Like, everybody's talking about TikTok right now, even B2B. How can founders avoid chasing the new thing and really like miss the good thing that they have right now?
Yeah, most of the things are, I think, making sure that you know what's happening right now. So you know kind of what's important in your business right now. So that has to do with what is the most important thing you can be working on. For example, with FYI, the most important thing we can be working on is building a product that teams love. That's actually our internal kind of product teams, like kind of goal and milestone, which is like build a product teams love. And so that's the number one thing we're working on. Anything that doesn't really come into contact with that or help us with that, we're not doing. So that's one aspect, which is know what you should focus on. The second aspect that I tend to recommend is that you should be essentially looking at everything that's working before you decide to do new things, and make sure that you're maximizing every single thing that's working. So if you've got paid acquisition working for you, make sure you're maximizing it. If you've got like social media working for you and it's converting for you, make sure you're maximizing it. If you're getting a bunch of search traffic and that's working for you, make sure you're maximizing it. So double down on what's working before you go chase anything new. And then when you chase something new, make sure that you're doing very limited and smart experiments and testing. So low budget is one way to think about it. Another way to think about it is just, I want to learn what this looks like. I want to learn what my clicks are going to be from it, or how much traffic I'm going to get. Look, at the end of the day, it's when it comes to like channels and marketing and things like that, it's all about getting traffic, getting signups. And so it starts with like, can I get traffic from this channel and at what cost? And my recommendation is actually to quantify the cost regardless of the channel, even if it requires a lot of like manual work or things that you might find hard to quantify. Because if it's not quantified, it's very hard to repeat and scale.
This is the first time I've asked this. I actually got this from a podcast I listened to called How I Built This by Guy Raz. How much of where you are right now is luck, and how much of it is just through your hard work?
You make your own luck. So I really believe that. And so I think what you're doing is you're creating opportunities to essentially capitalize on the things and events that happen in your life. And I really believe that about most of life, if not all of life. So I'm just looking to move through my day and make sure that I'm able to capitalize on whatever comes about. And that's really the best I can hope for is kind of my take on it. I can't do much better than that. How about that?
That's good.
Like all I can do is the best I can, right? And if I believe that things are just thrown my way and you know, I'm lucky or I'm not lucky, like that doesn't really help me. What helps me is the fact that I'm going through my day and I'm setting myself up to capitalize on whatever shows up. And the more that shows up, the more I can capitalize on it. So I'm just trying to create more.
Just last question. What is your call to action to my listeners? Do you want them to go to FYI or do you want them to go somewhere else?
Yeah, go to usefyi.com and check out the product and let me know what you think. I'd love feedback. I send a welcome email to most people who sign up, if not all the people who sign up. And we'll be building a product for teams. So if you're really into sort of this problem resonates with you, we're really working on how teams can kind of solve it. I'm also HNSHAH on Twitter. And that's actually my Gmail in case anyone wants to email me. It's HNSHAH@gmail.com. And I also run a newsletter with my co-founder Marie called Product Habits. It's at producthabits.com. And we talk a lot about product and stuff like this. I think you still have one more question for me and you. I'm going to throw it at you.
All right, throw it out.
I don't know. What do you got?
I could ask one more. Like, what is your one advice to founders?
What's my advice to founders? I think today my biggest piece of advice to founders is it's important to realize that whatever's going on today, whatever's happening today, and this is for anybody. I don't think it's just founders, but founders generally tend to be very up and down with their energy, up and down with what's going on in their lives, what's going on in their work. You know, tomorrow's a new day, right? Like, just remember, tomorrow's a new day, and you have a lot more control a lot more influence over the things that are happening in your life and your business than you might think initially. So anything that's happening today, tomorrow's a new day. That would be my biggest piece of sort of like philosophy that I would like to share today.
Awesome. That's it. I think that's a good place to end. Thanks so much for your time, Hayden. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening all the way until the very end. Let me share with you my three key takeaways. First, MVP is not about building a quote-unquote minimal product that you can build upon. He didn't say that we get MVP so wrong. According to him, it's the thing you create in order to learn about your customers and market. It's what you need to do right now to validate or invalidate your riskiest assumption. Second, double down on what's working before you chase anything new. It's so easy to get caught up with new and shiny things. Know what's working and ask yourself, how can I maximize it this? And then when you chase something new, make sure they're limited and smart experiments. Third, quantify your costs for marketing, even if it's time consuming and requires a ton of manual work. How can you optimize what you can't measure? I had someone ask me recently, what should be the first thing they're doing to get the growth process going? They weren't measuring each step of their customer's journey and funnel. I said that's what you need to be focusing on right now, because if you don't know where the gaps are, you don't know where you need to focus your growth energy on. Did I miss something? Share with me your takeaways from this episode on Twitter at RamleyJohn or email ramley@growthtoday.fm. I'd love to hear from you. And before we end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Like I said earlier, this podcast is a one-person show. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast in my free time. I want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a demand generation and ops agency for B2B SaaS companies. Check them out at 42.agency. That's FourtyTwo.agency. Please also support this podcast. There's three easy ways to do that. You can share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn and tell a friend about this podcast. Second, you can join the Growth Today mailing list. You'll get the cheat sheets directly emailed to you. I'll also tell you who my next guests are and what you can ask questions via email to them. And third, support me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode for exclusive content and access. With your support, I can pay for my hosting fees, marketing tools, and finally get somebody to help me edit with the show. With your help, I can continue to get some really amazing experts on this show. You can go to patreon.com/growthtoday, or you can find that link in the description below. Other than that, as always, keep on growing.